You are listening to Explore by the Cycling Podcast, powered by Super Sapiens. Energy management for committed athletes and coaches.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney. Hello, Lionel.
Hello, Richard.
And what are we doing, Lionel? What's the purpose of this episode?
Well, this is the return of Explore, which has been on hiatus since a little bit earlier in the year. My last episode was the interview with Rolf Smith when I went down to the south coast of England and talked to him about his very interesting lockdown project. That was in around May, June time, wasn't it? But we're back with a mini series of Explore over the next few weeks.
We are indeed. We've got certainly four episodes coming up over the next 4 weeks, take you through November as the winter months sort of begin and it gets darker in the evenings. Our minds can wander to exciting cycling adventures. In this episode, we'll be looking at our own riding. You and I went to the north of France recently for Paris-Roubaix, and on the day before the women's race, we went out and recce'd some of the pavé, didn't we?
We did. Was that a recce? I suppose it was. Mm-hmm. We dipped our toe in, didn't we, really?
It was certainly a rattle.
It was a rattle. We were scared back from the deeper waters of the pavé, weren't we, by the severity of the cobblestones, which I'd forgotten about. I've ridden the cobblestones a fair few times in the past, as you'll hear, but they were shaking my brain against the inside of my skull, it felt like at times.
Yeah, it was my first time on the proper pavé, and it was a rude awakening. And it's interesting to hear back just how hard we found that. But it's an episode of three parts, because the next two parts are my recent trip to Veneto, and apologies for my varying pronunciation of Veneto in this episode. I was learning the correct pronunciation as I went along, and then I was firmly put in my place when I got back by Daniel, inevitably. But I was in Veneto for Filippo Pozzato's new week of races and riding. So you'll hear me try a bit of gravel riding and also taking part in Pozzato's Gran Fondo later in the episode. I should explain, during the Gran Fondo, we hear quite a lot from Guy. That's Guy Franzen, the head of sport at Het Nieuwsblad, who is also the bicycle guy. It's a clever play on words there. He writes a column every Saturday in Het Nieuwsblad about all things cycling, not just the sport, but cycling for kids, cycling infrastructure, and it's a very popular column. He writes the Bicycle Guy, so that's a big part of what he does. We'll hear from Ivan Basso in that part of the podcast, from Filippo Pozzato himself as well, of course. But had a lot of fun that week in Bassano del Grappa, and I'm actually, you might hear some background noise, I'm currently in Provence, in Vaison-la-Romaine, where I've been riding this week, avoiding Mont Ventoux. It's been a lot of fun. I mean, the roads around here are great for riding on. Why ruin it by riding up Mont Ventoux, was my attitude this week.
Well, we featured Hannah Troup riding Mont Ventoux in an episode of Explore last year, didn't we? So, you know, you can't have too much of a good thing.
Been done.
Ticked off.
So, coming up later in the series as well, next week we're going to hear from Mark Bowman, who recently did his first ever organised race, GB Giro, and he kept an audio diary for the Cycling Podcast. That completes a circle, because the first ever episode of Explore was an interview with Mark Bowman about his round-the-world record-breaking ride a few years ago. In the third episode of Explore, a really fascinating episode with Adam Bowie, one of our producers, who, well, I'll not spoil it, but Adam became a new man over the last year or so, and this episode of Explore will document his ride down the King Alfred's Way, which is not a ride I was familiar with, but it's a great episode with the story of that adventure, plus Adam's own story about just how he has transformed himself over the last 18 months or so. So lots to look forward to in this mini-series of Explore, but shall we crack on, Lionel, and head over to the north of France and the cobbles of Paris-Roubaix?
Yeah, let the air out of our tyres a little bit so we can cope with the pavé. And which sector are we heading to first? Well, it will be a tough one, that's for sure. There's no easy sections of pavé in northeastern France.
¶¶
Paris-Roubaix weekend starts here, Richard. What's the plan?
The plan is, Lionel, to head out from here, we're seeing Valenciennes, to try and do the first few sectors of pavé that the women will do tomorrow.
Right, which are? Do you know off the top of your head which ones they are? We'll find out, won't we? The road will take us to the pavé.
Yes, I do, Lionel. They're sectors 17, 16, 15 and 14, I believe.
And we're with Simon Gill, photographer extraordinaire, and he's wearing a mid-80s Tour de France green jersey. The sort of thing that Sean Kelly would have worn.
I would actually put it before the 80s. It's an acrylic material, which...
It could be any time from 79 to 83, that jersey with that badge on it.
Fake jerseys should I put on?
They're not necessarily fake, Simon. Not considering the price you paid for them. I think they're genuine.
It's not to be revealed.
It's a price secret. Were they eBay purchases?
They were eBay purchases, yeah. They leapt out at me, and I thought they'd look good on the wall of my cafe.
Ah, your cafe in Aldbury, in Hertfordshire, and you've got the green, the King of the Mountains polka dot, and the white jersey. I mean, knocking on a bit now for the best young rider, I'm afraid, Simon, although you are the youngest of our little mini peloton rolling out today.
Lionel, I'm curious, what are you like on the pavé? I imagine you are pretty useful on the pavé. You've got the attributes to make you pretty handy pavé rider, I would have thought.
Pretty useful. Well, the first three letters of that word.
I hope you'll flatten it before the...
I'll smooth out the pavé for the riders tomorrow, yeah, don't worry. Well, as I'm very fond of telling people, I've ridden the full 260-kilometre sportive run by the Velo Club Roubaix. It was the hardest day I've ever had on a bike. I completely underestimated the first 100 and so kilometres where there is no pavé. And you think, oh, it's flat. It's not flat. Northern France is rolling. As you know, Rich, you live a bit further over to the west from here. And it was a great day's riding. I was flying over the Arenberg. I felt really good. And then gradually the power meter, my internal power meter, began to fade, and by the end I didn't have enough to power a very low wattage light bulb, unfortunately.
I was listening to Mitch Docker's Talking Luft yesterday with Hannah Barnes. Would that be your war story that day?
That would be my war story. I'm quite proud of having ridden that. The distance, the difficulty, there were so many things that happened that day. It was held in June, so it was a relatively warm day. My contact lenses fell out at one point because my eyes were just so dry and dusty. Someone actually overtook me riding along with just a seat post, no saddle. Their saddle had obviously snapped off on the cobbles at some point. We saw so many crashes because it is a challenge to ride these stones. They are not to be taken lightly. You have to treat them with respect. And the counterintuitive thing is you do have to try and get up to a good pace and just try to cruise over the top. Easier said than done, obviously. And I've lost a bit of weight lately, Rich, as I'm sure you've noticed.
Nothing of you. I've never ridden on this pavé before. I've never ridden on the Paris-Roubaix pavé, so this is a first for me today.
But you've been doing some cobbles in Belgium. They are another level up. They are different. Until you see them and ride them and experience that jarring, you don't really know what to expect. They're not as smooth and uniform as the Flandrian cobble, so we'd probably better get on the road before the rain comes in this afternoon. So, approaching Arenberg from Wallers. You know it's coming because you can see the mine shafts in the distance, so they disappear from view a bit behind the trees occasionally, but they're always there on the horizon, just the point that you're heading towards. And that's
where you know you're going to be approaching the Forest of Arenberg, the Trench of Arenberg, and it's a downhill approach on really smooth roads. We've got a bit of a tailwind here, and you can see the level crossing just before, and there's a sense of foreboding because the trees kind of envelop the road a bit, and there's a what looks like a sort of rusty iron bridge that goes across maybe 100 or 200 meters in, and it looks like there's quite a dip in the road. As you hit the cobbles, you go over the railway, and then fans have been up early spraying Mitch for Mitch Docker on the road, and onto the cobbles. Oh, and they're every bit as bad as I remember them. Oh, not the fastest entry to the cobbles there because there was a van parked in the way. Oh my word, the jarring on the arms and the legs is really something. There's big holes as well. The friends of Paris-Roubaix, Les Amis de Paris-Roubaix, have cleaned up the cobbles, they say, but they're still rough, ready, mud in between them a bit, mossy grass. Oh, and the blurry road just stretches ahead of me. Oh. Oh. Well, Richard, that's the famous section at Hornang. We're by the two water towers, which mark the sort of halfway point of this sector. We're on a lovely smooth bit of tarmac, but I'm afraid to tell you that we've got about the same again to do. What did you make of that?
Horrible. I've got a headache. I feel like everything's been rattled up inside me and my bike. Worried about my new bike, but grim. It lulls you in, doesn't it? That's the first sector of cobbles that the women will tackle. And it starts off very benign, very smooth. And you think, this is all right. You know, because I've just tried riding in Arenberg and that was absolutely awful. And I thought, this is okay, can handle this. And then about halfway through, suddenly the cobbles turn into, well, the spaces between them are bigger and they're just rougher. And I got a real shaking there.
You get the occasional hard jolt as well, don't you, where your sort of elbows are on the cusp of locking, and it's just a gradual wearing of it, isn't it? Because it's not like riding through treacle, because it's not smooth. Treacle is lovely and syrupy and smooth, isn't it? But cobbles are not. But you can feel the pace dropping and the legs start to hurt a bit more, your heart rate's going up, the breathing's getting more difficult, and once you're not on top of it, you're just fighting a losing battle.
And what amazes me when I'm riding over it on my own like that is, you know, I can pick my line. Doing it in a bunch where you really got no choice but where you are, and you can't even look to see where the smoother line might be. You're at the mercy of, you know, whatever's in front of you, and you've got no say in the matter. That's horrendous. So really looking forward to standing there tomorrow at that precise point and watching the riders come clattering over.
How many more sectors have we got on our ride, apart from this, the second half of Hornang here?
I think we've got half another sector on our ride line on the basis of that, because they're kind of optional. We can do the... one member of our party is nodding enthusiastically at that. But, you know, I love riding my bike. I enjoy riding my bike on nice, smooth tarmac. I love watching Paris-Roubaix. I think it's brilliant, but it's not that enjoyable to ride over that stuff, is it, really? I mean, when we were at Arenberg, we saw three very fast, very fit-looking riders just sail. It looked quite easy because the speed they were going, they were kind of skimming the surface in a way. That's what it looked like. And that looked quite fun, but nah. Not for me, Clive.
No, you've got to be going well to be really well to be skimming over
and
the top like that.
And you've got to commit really fully to it. And there's always a sort of little voice telling me that the faster you go, the more it'll hurt if you fall off.
That is a good point. I hadn't even thought about falling off. Now all I can think is the fear of falling off. Having broken my collarbone earlier this year, I don't want to do that again. I'm gonna use that as an excuse to go a bit more slowly. Here we are, Richard, back at our very charming guest house in Valenciennes after, what was that, 70 plus kilometre ride? A sample of the cobbles, a mere amuse-bouche compared to what the riders will be doing over the weekend. But we were saying just as we pulled in here, not the easiest part of the world to find the most attractive roads. We were on a cycle track in the undergrowth alongside the auto route. I thought you were going to take us onto the motorway at one point.
So did I. It's not... Parts of this part of the world aren't that attractive, are they? It's not called the Hell of the North for nothing. We rode all of the first sector of cobbles for the women's race, and I'm stunned at how hard that sector is for the first section. It could be decisive, you know, for a lot of people. And it seems odd to me that's the first sector, and it comes quite early in the race. They're not sort of easing them in gently at all. So that's going to be carnage, I think. It's something you feel you have to do. I've never ridden on the pavé, you have. So it was a first for me to actually ride on it. I've stood by the side of it, but you don't get a sense from the side of just how hard it is. And racing over it, you know, I mean, not we were racing over it, but I tried to ride quite fast over one bit, and I almost lost control of the bike just because of the vibrations in my arms causing this strange sensation. So it's unlike any other kind of cycle racing challenge, really. And it's going to be, the women's race in particular, because it's uncharted territory, it's going to be absolutely fascinating for that.
Yeah, it's the contrast as well, isn't it, between the cobbles, and then you get popped out. You almost get sort of slung shot back out onto some lovely, smooth suburban and country roads. The surfaces are great, actually. It was just where we got pinged onto sort of cycle tracks. There was some good segregated cycle track as well, wasn't there? We kept off the roads more or less, the busy roads more or less. But I would say that if you're coming over to ride and sample the cobbles, come on the weekend of the race and just follow the yellow arrows and actually just sample a chunk of the course.
It's
a great way. Sample, yeah. I mean, yeah, there's a limit, isn't there?
If you are one of those people sitting at home preparing to watch on TV, hoping for rain, take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror and ask yourself some searching questions. Because I wouldn't wish for rain for anybody to ride on those bits of road.
I was that person until I rode it. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I hope you're off to take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror, Lionel.
I am. I'll do that now, Richard.
The Cycling Podcast, powered by Super Sapiens. Energy management for committed athletes and coaches. And now you can wear the Super Sapiens Energy Band, the first and only wearable that can display real-time glucose data directly from Abbott's LibreSense Glucose Sport Biosensor. The Super Sapiens Energy Band is available at supersapiens.com for €159.
Thanks very much indeed to our title sponsor, Super Sapiens, for continuous glucose monitoring. It can help you with your riding, whatever riding you happen to be doing. For more information, go to supersapiens.com. And Super Sapiens are the title sponsor for the Cycling Podcast across all the shows that we do, including Explore. So a big thank you to them. I'm in beautiful Piazzola sul Brenta near Vicenza in the Veneto region in the northeast of Italy. And for 6 days, I'm staying in nearby Bassano del Grappa for 3 new races and a Gran Fondo, which is tomorrow and which I am riding.
But today I'm waiting for the finish of race number two in this new collection of races. It's billed, this race today, as the first professional gravel race. It's mid-October, so a late finish to the season for some of the riders taking part, and they include members of Astana, Cofidis and Intermarché. But the sun's shining, it's about 17 degrees, and it's extremely pleasant. All of these events this week have been organised by Filippo Pozzato, the former professional, a Milan-San Remo winner, and long-time favourite of the cycling podcast, affectionately known, of course, as the Peacock of Sandrigo. We rode some of the gravel roads, or paths, because some of them were very narrow yesterday, in the company of Pozzato and Daniele Benatti as well. And I remarked to a colleague that although Pozzato was looking quite fit, he wasn't very peacock-like in his all-black and grey top and shorts. And my impression was that he hasn't been riding his bike all that much since retiring. I don't think he was riding much when he was a professional, remarked my colleague rather dryly and a bit cruelly. We'll hear a bit from our gravel ride in a moment, but while we've been in the Veneto region, we've been visiting some of the many bike companies that are based and which are originally from this area. It really is an amazing constellation of some of the most well-known and revered brands in the cycling world, all here in Veneto. Much was made of the passion that runs through all these companies and the fact that this is because the founding family remains in control. But there's also a sense of family when it comes to their riders, the professionals that they support and that are part of their family. At CD, there was a wall of fame with all the moulds for the feet of the riders who wear CD shoes, including retired riders. Pozzato's feet were there, more recent ones like Chris Froome, Sonny Colbrelli. We actually saw a new pair of shoes being made for Colbrelli by one of the sewing machine operators. And we were joined on our tour of the factory by another of their riders, Maurizio Fondriest, the 1988 world champion, and the moulds of his feet were still there too. On our ride earlier in the day, I spoke to a member of staff at one of these brands, I won't say which one, who said that having the family in charge could be both good and bad. Anyway, back to Piazzola sul Brenta, where I'm enjoying a gloriously illicit post-11am cappuccino. Funny how it tastes better at a time when Daniel says you're not allowed to drink it. But Pozzato wants to put Veneto on the cycling map. I mean, it already is, thanks to these iconic brands that we've been visiting, but also as a place to ride. And that's what this week is partly about. It's partly also about the off-road riding options, which is what today's gravel race is all about. But before we hear about the race, and when I last checked, Alexei Lutsenko of Astana was away on his own, and he'll be a very hard man to catch. Before we catch up with what's happening in the race and hear from some of the riders, let's hear about our gravel ride yesterday. Well, I would describe myself as a gravel skeptic. I love riding my mountain bike off-road, and I've never really understood the point of a dedicated gravel bike, but that could be about to change because we've just left the Villiers factory on our Villiers gravel bikes. And we're going to hit some sections of gravel that are going to be used in tomorrow's first professional gravel race, which Filippo Pozzato is putting on here in the Veneto region. Villiers, we've just been a tour of the factory, fascinating company with a long history from 1906 onwards. Started in Bassano del Grappa, and in common with a lot of manufacturers, we had a tour of the Campagnolo factory the other day. Gravel is a huge part of their business now. It's really taken off, and here in Italy it seems very popular indeed. So could Veneto become as famous for its gravel roads as Tuscany is for its Strada Bianca? Luca from Villiers, you gave us a tour of the factory, and we're riding today some of the gravel sections that will feature in tomorrow's race, I believe.
Yeah, now we are. We started from Rossano, and we are doing some gravel, reaching the Piazzola sul Brenta, is where the race ride tomorrow. And then when we arrive in Piazzola, we do the loop, the final loop. They're making three loops at the end. Very beautiful landscapes and along the river, and very nice.
So the question I'm asking is, could the gravel roads of Veneto become as famous as the Strada Bianca of Tuscany?
maybe it take a while, but the potential is really, really high here. So you can see with your eyes today and tomorrow in the race that is really something really cool. So the potential is high, so I hope so.
Okay, I think we're about to hit our first bit of gravel. This is single track gravel here.
We start with a single track, but this is not part of the circuit of the race.
I hope not.
No. Also in the race there will be a single track we can see later.
Wow.
Now we start with a single track. We are starting in Tezze sul Brenta, that is a small town along the Brenta River, that starting from the Trento city and go to the sea. Here we have a single track, and then we have both part of tarmac, but with no cars, and then another single track, and then pure gravel to Piazzale sul Brenta, and then we start the circuit.
Can you tell me what's special about a gravel bike?
Of course, gravel bike is something that is really big, because it's a discipline that is born, I can say, many, many years ago, but in year by year is evolving and develop a new system, new components, and new specific tires, for example, handlebars, the frame, because of the geometries and weights are a little bit different, forks for the shocks, absorbing, etc. And all the accessories like bags, like lights for riding in the night, so many different things. So you have the feeling of the road bike, because the drop bar, etc., but geometry are a little bit relaxed. So you have a shorter frame, higher frame, so you can ride an hour without problem. Mm. So
why a gravel bike and not a mountain bike, just for the speed?
If you're coming from the road world, it's something that is more close to the road bike, because the position on the bike, etc. And of course, at the speed, because the geometry and the tires are a little bit tiny, and compared to a mountain bike, it's a completely different speed. And of course, the legs matter, as always. So
you've got a very nice design here. Is that an off the peg, or is that a custom design you've got?
This is the Jena with a Unico paint scheme. That is our artist Sirius. This bike is painted by Dustin Clay. He's an American artist based in Portland, Oregon. And he's also our ambassador, brand ambassador. So we decided to paint this white gravel bike with a sort of a camouflage style that is his sign, his style is really, really, you can recognize it from hundreds.
And how much, I've been hearing a lot about how the gravel bike industry has really taken off. How noticeable has that been over the last couple of years, and how much of the business does that account for?
Yeah, you can imagine that in 2 years ago, for us, the gravel bike was 5% of our turnover. And now in 2 years, we get 10% of our turnover. So we get a double amount of bikes produced. And now with the new rave that the bike is, we present a couple of days ago, we put another segment, another brick on the wall. So we have a pure racing bike, so racing geometries, light frame, but with the white tires. So, you know, UCI is open for races, and now we have the perfect product now for attending this new style of a race, and we suppose in another couple of years to get the 20% of our turnover with the gravel bike.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, to remind me to tell you that this episode of Explore is sponsored by the Hammerhead Karoo 2. The chances are, as you're listening to Explore, you love riding your bike as I do, and you may well have a cycle computer. And perhaps, like me, you even wondered, just how much further can this technology go? Surely we've reached the summit of what a cycle computer can offer us. And so I was really interested to see what the Hammerhead Karoo 2 is all about. And this morning I went for my first ride with it, and so I can give my first impressions. And the first thing to say is that the setup process was really simple. I didn't have to plug it into my computer or anything. I just connected it to my Wi-Fi, it did a quick software update, and before I knew it, I was ready to ride. The Hammerhead comes with an aero mount and also an adapter, so you can use a more standard mount. So I've got the aero mount on my best bike and the other mount on my winter bike, and so I can easily switch between the two. The most striking thing about the Karoo 2 is the display, which is really very elegant. And it's actually quite difficult to convey in words what it looks like, because it's almost not like an electronic gadget at all. The screen has got a sort of matte finish to it, and the typography and graphics are really bright, clean and clear. And I found that you can display a lot of information at once, but it's not cluttered or confusing. So I was able to pick out some information at a glance without taking my eyes off the road very much. The touchscreen works really well too. It was pretty chilly this morning, so I was wearing full finger gloves, but it still worked well. But if you want to, you can go old school and use the buttons on the side to scroll through the screens. I've just got home and I've set up my Hammerhead account and I've linked it to Strava, and my ride is already on there. It's just uploaded seamlessly. One of the things I'm really looking forward to trying out next time I ride is the climber feature. I'm going to plot a route on the Hammerhead dashboard, and then apparently it will display the change in gradient and show me the profile of what's ahead of me and give me a distance to the top of each climb in real time. So I will have a go at that next time, and I'll talk about that next time we are sponsored by the Hammerhead Karoo 2. For a limited time, all of you listeners can get a free Hammerhead heart rate monitor with the purchase of a Karoo 2. Go to hammerhead.io right now and use the promo code CYCLE at checkout to get yours today. That's a free Hammerhead heart rate monitor with the purchase of every Karoo 2. Hammerhead.io is the website. The promo code is CYCLE, but this is just a limited time offer. So if you want a free heart rate monitor with the Karoo 2, go to hammerhead.io now and use the promo code CYCLE.
Here we are on a real gravel track alongside the Brenta River, which runs through Bassano del Grappa and goes all the way down to Venice. It features in the opening to the Ernest Hemingway novel, of course, A Farewell to Arms. And loyal listeners will remember that back at the Giro in 2018, I believe, we got another Midwestern like Hemingway, Larry Warbass, to read the opening passage to that book, which describes the scene from the house in which Hemingway stayed during World War I and where Daniel Freeman and I stayed during the 27 Giro d'Italia.
In the late summer of that year, we lived in a house in a village that looked across the river and the plain to the mountains. In the bed of the river, there were pebbles and boulders, dry and white in the sun, and the water was clear and swiftly moving and blue in the channels. Troops went by the house and down the road, and the dust they raised powdered the leaves of the trees. The trunks of the trees, too, were dusty, and the leaves fell early that year, and we saw the troops marching along the road, and the dust rising and leaves, stirred by the breeze, falling, and the soldiers marching, and afterward the road bare and white except for the leaves.
That was Larry Warbass, a.k.a. Ernest Hemingway. And the magnificent Brenta is now to my right. We've just crossed over it, glittering in the sunshine, the autumnal sunshine. It's absolutely perfect weather. It's about 17, 18 degrees. There's a chill in the air, but it's just warm enough to wear short sleeves and shorts. And it's absolutely perfect cycling weather. My initial reaction to my first outing on a gravel bike. I'm having my photograph taken at the moment by Matteo. First time on a gravel bike, and as Luca said earlier, the main thing is the speed. It's much faster. We're in a group here as well, so it really feels like riding in a group on the road. There's much less margin for error than on a mountain bike, so we did tackle a small bit of single track, and it was slightly sketchy because although the tires are much thicker than on a road bike, they're much narrower than on a mountain bike, and I found that
quite hard to manage on slightly rougher terrain. But on relatively smooth gravel, a gravel bike beats a mountain bike. And the speed is very, very exhilarating. As soon as it gets a bit rougher though, I would opt for a mountain bike personally, but don't tell Villiers that, because this is a very nice gravel bike that I'm on. Well, I will try and catch up. We've got Daniele Binatti with us in the group today, still looking very fit, and Filippo Pozzato. But Pozzato has spent most of the ride on the phone, so it's been difficult to speak to him. Obviously, very in demand. He is organising 3 races this week, so I guess he's busy. We're on the gravel now that will feature in the race tomorrow. How's the race been designed for tomorrow? Have you had some help with that?
The point most important is the final in the circuit, the last three lap final is more technical. Before is in the start is technical, and after is easy because he's in the front of Laguna is only direct for too many kilometers. It's like this.
Yeah.
And after the final is I think is here. This is the final of the race, and the point is must technical is in 1 kilometer in front of this.
Well, I mean, where does it differ from Strada Bianca? You've got the hills there, I guess. This is a bit different, isn't it?
Yeah, this is more different because it's more technical. It's no in the road, but in the, when is technical, it's very technical. It's not like like Strada Bianca. Strada Bianca is normal road, but we don't have the what is in English asfalto.
The tarmac.
Tarmac. Yeah, it's not.
Have you had a good response to the first professional gravel race? I mean, have you been encouraged by that?
Yeah, the rider is happy for this, but the problem is the material is the team don't have the material. This is complicated for the start, but we want starting for the first race starting, and after I think in 2-3 years is more simple, because now is a historical moment, the difficulty for the material, because the component don't have frame, don't have this is the big problem for the team.
Do you enjoy riding on gravel? You've enjoyed racing in this race as a pro?
No, I don't want doing the race. I like enjoy the gravel because it's different to the road. It's possible to enjoy the village, the new track, new road in the middle of the nature. This is more beautiful for ride a bicycle.
Great. Well, let's tackle this next session, shall we? The technical stuff. That was Filippo Pozzato previewing a section of the gravel race, and oh my goodness, it is very technical indeed. More like a mountain bike race on road / gravel bikes. We're back on roads now. But yeah, it's going to be very interesting. A field of 60 they've got tomorrow. And I get the feeling that it's a bit of an experiment. And expectations are adjusted accordingly. As we heard, it was organised at quite short notice, and there's a real problem with materials, teams not having the right equipment and not being able to get the right equipment. Intermarché were keen to put in a big team, but some of the riders have been disappointed not to ride because they just don't have the right equipment for them. But yeah, very technical indeed. We're not going to see a big peloton come out of that bit of single track there. It's going to be very interesting to watch something completely different. I'll be there to see it. Well, there goes Lutsenko heading out for the last lap on this extremely difficult circuit, which we did a bit of yesterday, and I was quite surprised to see just how narrow the tracks and how technical the tracks were in places. We've got a long wait now until the bunch comes through, and I was surprised also to see that it is a bunch with, when they last passed, three Intermarché riders on the front. There's a mini peloton. Not a lot of riders started this race, about 35, but I was surprised to see them all together. So let's see, here they come now. A rider from the Italian national team on the front, an Intermarché rider behind. Well, it's a group of about 8 or 9, 10 riders now. That is the chasing group slash peloton. And you never know, they might catch him. Just over a minute, I made it. Could still be on. So there we have it. The Serenissima gravel race was won by Alexei Lutsenko, 42 seconds ahead. Well, he would have won it by more had he not stopped and lifted his bike above his head before the finish line, but he won it by 42 seconds from Riccardo Minali of Intermarché, who won the sprint from that little chasing group behind, with Nathan Haas of Cofidis third. Let's hear from a couple of the Intermarché riders. First, Boy van Poppel, who was in that chasing group and in the end finished 16th. And then Taco van der Hoorn, one of the favourites for today, who was 10th. First Van Poppel, and then Taco van der Hoorn, a stage winner in the Giro, of course, earlier this year.
It was quite an adventure. We were only with 30 guys in the start, but I think it was more than enough, because it was really fighting on the gravel. It was quite dangerous in the beginning, because you go with really high speed and all the stones are flying everywhere. So maybe it's a good idea to, I don't know how to, maybe I climb in the beginning or something to stretch the bunch a bit more.
Because it was, we rode some of the route yesterday. It was quite narrow and quite technical, yeah. not like a kind of normal gravel race.
Yeah, it was also sometimes you don't know where to go and then you have to, we went almost the wrong way, but yeah, it was quite an adventure, and it was the last race of the season, and it was nice weather in Italy. So yeah, and also for our sponsors, Cube, they make a big investment in the gravel bike, and then we can show it here with new tires and everything. So
I was going to ask, what was the bike you were riding today? I mean, how was it different to your normal road bike?
Yeah, I think the geometry is a bit different. Also because you can put a big, really fat tires inside, and for now it was maybe not necessary, but maybe if there's mud, you know, you can otherwise the mud gets stuck and the stones. So yeah, it was nice.
And when did Lutsenko get away, and how did he get away?
Yeah, one moment before the city we were racing full gas, and then he tagged alone. And yeah, we were controlling with three guys. I said to control a bit, like we give him 1 minute. But you know, it's Lutsenko.
He's really
strong. And then one moment we need to push it, and I was already empty, because it was a really long season for me. And yeah, in the end, we had to take, we need to gamble for the second place. So we slowed down a bit. And then so we can get longer into the race with the whole team. And then in the end they start attacking, and then in the end Minali gets second. So I think we the best result that we could get.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. It was quite a nice atmosphere at the start. Everybody was smiling, because nobody knows what to expect. Also because you don't know the roads. Like cyclocross, for example, is always the same lap, so you know what's coming up, but now you don't know.
So would you like to do more events like this?
Yeah, who knows?
As long as it's sunny like this.
Yeah.
How did you find it? How was it?
Yeah, it was okay. I enjoyed it, yeah. So, yeah, it was nice. And actually, was in the beginning, was a lot of gravel, and was quite difficult. And the last part was actually a lot of paved road and not really so much gravel, but it was still nice to do. And Lutsenko was too strong, but yeah, was fun doing, but was hard. Yeah, I did a record on Wednesday already. Okay. I was here already, so I knew what was going on. But we did quite easy in the beginning because it was still long, and but the beginning was the hardest part actually, and the latest part was just a lot of paved road. But in the end, was fun to do, and yeah, it was something. Was something different, so but yeah, it was only the original plan to only do for this, and but now I also ride on Sunday, so
you're gonna ride Sunday as well.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, gravel racing is obviously an evolving thing. The course here looked quite different to other gravel races I've seen. Have you ridden other gravel races as well?
No, this was my first one, so that was also the reason I wanted to do it, because I was curious about it. But yeah, it's different because it's a lot of bike path, so it's for with people like peloton like today with 30 guys, 40 guys, then it's okay, but you cannot ride with 20 or 20 guys here, because then it's only about positioning, and so then it's gonna be they have to go for bigger roads, and just if you have races like Port Epic or the other Strade Bianche or the other gravel road races, it's all wider roads, and you can do that for just only take that road for the whole course. Then would be a nice gravel race, for my opinion. But today it was too. But a peloton like this was nice, but the course was too narrow.
And how was the bike? Because you had a special gravel bike today as well.
Yeah, it was nice. Yes, I was really really nice to ride on it, and I really did a bit too less pressure, I think, also in the tires, because it was nice for the first part with the corners and the gravel, but afterwards it was really a lot of paved road, and I was expecting it to go a bit harder in the beginning, so I didn't put so much in it, but on the paved road it was a bit too soft. But yeah, it's also the first race, so you have to learn about it a bit and think about it, but it's nice to have the gravel bike, and yeah, it's something different, and also for training or something, I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
It's developing very quickly, and the UCI are bringing a world championship. Is it something you'd like to do more of?
Yeah, I would love to do it more. Yeah. If there is a possibility and it's possible to do it in my schedule for the road, then I would love to do some of the races. And I think for me it would be better if the race is a little bit longer, because for example, if you have 200 more, like the more endurance, but yeah, I would love to do it. Yeah,
and nice to be back in Italy, scene of your greatest triumph this year, I think.
That's true. Yeah, I love to be here, so I also went directly after Puri Tour to stay also at the last part of the season, also a bit enjoying Italy, a bit of the holiday, because now the weather is much nicer here to end the season and to do some training than at home in 10 degrees and rain. So also because of doing next week still Trenta, so it's nice to be here for 1 week also to keep the engine going and to train this environment and instead of Holland.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thanks very much to Science in Sport for their support of the Cycling Podcast. The perfect way to fuel your adventures, whatever, wherever they might take you. If you want 25% off all your Science in Sport products, go to scienceinsport.com and at the checkout, enter the discount code SISCP25. Well, it's early on Saturday morning, around 7:48 a.m. to be precise. I'm in Cittadella for the start of Veneto Go, which is the Gran Fondo. 112 kilometres up to Bassana del Grappa, then around a bit of a hilly circuit, the same as the riders will tackle tomorrow in the Veneto Classic. Around 200 riders today, apparently. Four ride leaders: Alessandro Balan, Ivan Basso, Daniele Benati, and Fabian Cancellara. I've opted to go with Cancellara, so we'll see
how that goes. I imagine he will be leading quite a big group, so I imagine a lot of people will want to go with him. It's about 8 degrees at the moment, but it's sunny. I'm optimistic. I'm the only one with exposed arms. A lot of people dress as if it's winter, which is maybe how it feels for your average Italian, but legs, overshoes, gloves, I feel a little bit underdressed, but never mind, I'm sure it'll be fine. And I'm looking forward to it. The weather will be getting much warmer as the morning goes on, up to 17, 18 degrees by lunchtime, which will be very pleasant. So looking forward to a nice ride, and I'll report from out on the course. Filippo's joined us. Looks like he's going well.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, Guy, we've left Cittadella and the ride has settled down, but it was a frantic start there, wasn't it?
Yes, very nervous. Everybody, it seems as everybody would be in the wheel of Fabian Cancellara. And Fabian said before, if you want to go, go. I do my own tempo, but now Filippo Pozzato is moving forward.
Well, it turned out, yeah, we've got Basso with us, well, even Basso, but in fact, he's just pulled alongside you there, but yeah, the tempo they were setting was quite fast, but you've ridden in Italy before, and you said, you warned me about this, you told me that these group rides are basically just races.
It's as if their hormones are influencing enormously. They are a band of wild horses and running to the stables. And I see a few women in the peloton too, and the same for them. They are lookalikes from the men. So, but all this will change.
This is
the first time.
Well, settle down now a bit, and we were saying we need Tim De Clercq to get on the front and just keep everybody calm, don't we?
Yeah. We have to take the lead, as we are.
Where's El Tractor when we need him? Going around roundabouts is particularly hairy. It's like a race in the sense that you see guys going both sides around roundabouts. We are getting a bit of support here. There are motorcycle outriders and the vehicles don't really have any choice but to stop and let us through. We are a marauding beast, about 250 odd riders. A very exhilarating experience. We've been up the first climb of the day, Azzola. It was tough. Bit of a shock to the system after some pretty fast roads. I saw Ivan Basso moving up and I knew the climb was coming, and it was narrow roads through a very dark tunnel at one point as well, so challenging. Guy, you actually came off on the descent.
Yeah, I was in the descent and another rider came very close to me and he made a maneuver I didn't expect, and so I fell on the ground. And I think I had a high speed at the moment, but luckily it was a good fall. Nothing.
You're okay.
Broken.
You're tough.
No shoulder.
You're a tough Belgian. Okay, coming through Bassano del Grappa here. We've just stopped at some traffic lights. I thought I'd record about this because one thing I've noticed is the Italians talk all the time while they're riding. I mean, I'm riding behind Basso and he has been in animated conversation the entire ride. It's quite impressive. It's quite impressive. And Guy's noted how many of these riders are really fit. I mean,
you could see on the climb they were in good shape. We were both suffering quite a lot, quite visibly and audibly, I think. But seemed to be a lot of very fit riders around about us. Bellissimo. Well, we've just done the cobbled climb that we feared. Sharp little stones, very, very steep indeed. It caught a lot of people out. And at the top we've stopped. And that climb is called La Tisa. Two climbs still to come. We're about 65 kilometres into the ride. And yeah, they've set up a little stop here, but without any refreshments, which is a bit unfortunate. I wonder how the people who live here feel about the noise. But we've got Basso and Pozzato has joined us now, and Fabian Cancellara is the main draw, it has to be said, although Basso is pretty popular as well. Poor old Alessandro Ballan, no one seems too bothered about him. He's off away in a group up ahead with Daniele Benatti. I must say, this is unlike any other equivalent ride I've done before. It hasn't split into little groups. It's been fast from the start, but the group has stayed together. There have been lulls, letting people get back on if they were off the back. But it's stayed together as one big group. It's pretty controlled, although pretty fast as well. So we're all together. I think there are at least 250 people here. A little number of them up the road in the other group, but I would say 200 at least here. And it's a lot of fun. You just get swept along. But some of the old sensations that I had racing come back to me when you make a big effort to get near the front and then just kind of switch off for a bit and you find yourself at the back again. There's always somebody trying to come around you, and on any of the uphills you make quite a big effort to go past people and they just come thundering past you again on the descent. Yeah, it's all coming back. There's never a kind of easy moment. It's always nervous and tense, at least it is for me. I was never that comfortable in the bunch. Some people clearly are, and for some people that's where they make the gains. They just they can relax on the climbs and know that they'll come back on the descents. It's a real skill. Well, 75 kilometres in, and we stopped for refreshments, drinks, and some lovely crusty white rolls with prosciutto ham and all kinds of nice sliced meat. So that's very welcome indeed. Cancellara, Basso and Pozzato very much in demand for photographs and so on. But I'm going to try and grab a word with the organiser, the big chief, Pozzato. Find out how he's enjoying his day.
Yeah, I'm happy because the guy is happy, and this is important for today. This is the focus or this day. I think the sponsor is happy. I think it's the day for funny, for enjoy the cycling, and this is very important for today.
You got nice weather for it, but
yeah, very cool. Lucky. Yeah, this is very really lucky for great. The weather because October is not normal. Yeah, yeah.
But your hometown is pretty close to here, so you must know these roads very well.
Yeah, I'm living when I stay in Italy, I'm living in Marostica, and it's near here, is 8 kilometers.
And how's the week going? Because this is a new thing. You want this to develop, don't you, over the next few years?
Yeah, this is the road I want to put inside the new classic for me, because it's similar to Belgium, but I think the road is better. The place I think is more beautiful to see, and I think in 2 or 3 years is possible. Is a big event because the good road and a good place for looking for enjoy the life.
Always at this time of year, or would you like to have a different, maybe earlier in the year?
Yes, is different, but I think it's better. I like this because it's my place when I'm born, and I loving this place. And for this, I want to put in the big race for the guys, for the people, because we are love the cycling, and I think it's the best place for running ride the bike.
Yeah, it's very nice. Tomorrow, I think, is the race that you're most looking forward to, isn't it? That's kind of is that the race that's closest to your heart?
Yeah, it's in the final. It's very hard because I have take closer the race for the final, and it's so much slow climb for the final. But the last 16 kilometers is very, very hard.
And we've still got a hard climb today. How are you? I mean, are you riding your bike much now in retirement?
Yeah, I ride normally these for the training, and for these I want to put in the race. I think it's very, very good for the race.
So we're going to look for an attack from Pozzato on the climb today?
No, it's not possible. I don't have legs for attack today.
On the descent?
It's only for eating and for the drink today.
Well, we're coming back into the fortified town of Cittadella. Just riding around the walls just now. And it's been 113 kilometres. After the rest stop, the refreshment stop, we tackled the climb of La Rosilla, which was very hard. Kind of mini Alpe d'Huez, some hairpins, very mini, but pretty tough. True to the word and spirit of Pozzato, Cancellara and Basso went to the front, and a few others formed a line across the front to prevent anybody from going too fast up there, which was quite nice. It was very controlled. I must say, it's been a very controlled ride all day. Fast, not slow, but it hasn't broken into groups. It hasn't turned into a race. I must say, I did the Flanders World Championship Sportiva a few weeks ago, and it very much did turn into a race. Lots of groups all over the place. This has been, as I say, not been hanging around, but stuck together as a group, and it never turned into a race. We're just coming under the finishing banner here. So, yeah, something a bit different. And Pozzato got his wish. It wasn't a race. It was a bit of fun. Here we are. Basso's been spotted. I came in on his wheel. Oh, now we get our finisher's medal. Lovely. Guy, we finished. We made it. How was your ride from the refreshment stop onwards? That was quite a tough climb, wasn't it? Yes. Rosilla.
It was hard, and there was a hill that was announced that I knew it was coming, but there were several small climbs not indicated, and they were very, very hard.
It was a steep one, wasn't there?
Yes,
really, really steep one.
There was a very short one. I don't know, I think it's about 20%.
Well, what did you think earlier on of the cobbled climb? Very Flandrian.
Yes, the Koppenberg word. It's look-alike from the Koppenberg.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the Paterberg.
Yeah.
Very...
Apart from your spill, though, an enjoyable event.
Yes, because it's all, as I said, all Italian atmosphere. I've never seen this in Flanders. They're offering, during the race, there was a stop on the mountain, and they're offering some spritz and offering some Prosecco, all the Italian way.
And they're still chatting.
Yeah.
I'm self-talking all day.
Yeah, all the way.
I'm waiting to have a word with Ivan Basso here, but he just keeps talking. He hasn't stopped talking all day. I'll leave you to find the medical post.
Thank you.
Ivan, I've been riding behind you a lot of today. You've been chatting a lot of the ride there, but did you enjoy that today?
Yes. It's nice because many of these people... they are fans when I'm a professional rider. So today you have a possibility to share time together, smile together, ride together, eat together, drink together. So it's one part of the cycling nicer to split time together on the bike.
Do you get to ride your bike a lot these days? You're busy running your team.
Yeah, I don't tell you how many K I do because I'm not... I don't feel okay when I say the number. I just say I do more kilometer running than bike, so it's not good.
That doesn't make me feel good because you went up the climbs quicker than me, Dave. I guess that's to be expected. And you're a friend of Pizzato's as well. Do you like what he's put together here this week of racing at the end of the year, do you think? I mean, we've been very lucky with the weather, obviously, but do you think this has got the potential to grow into something important in the Italian calendar?
Yeah, I think people make a fantastic work. It's a cycling, a week cycling event in Veneto, in this region, and you can share professional race with Gran Fondo gravel. So it's a very important week for the cycling in Italy and also in Veneto, especially in Veneto.
And your team, are they, they've been support, they were riding the other day, are they riding tomorrow as well?
Yes, we ride tomorrow, last race of the year.
And how are plans proceeding for next year? Because you're stepping up next year, aren't you, the team?
Well, we have more budget, but we want to grow up slowly and follow the time and not run too fast.
You must be happy with this year though. I mean, a stage win at the Giro was probably the highlight, but you must be pleased with how the team's done.
Yeah, we are happy because we do a fantastic season, more than what we expect, but you're already still old. We have to think in the new one.
I was admiring your bike as well. I mean, this is your own brand of bikes,
yes.
Isn't it, the Aurum
brand? Me and Alberto, we are happy because we build up a company. It's a young company, but we put in this bike all our experience with engineer and designer to do one of the best bike for us.
It's a very nice looking machine. It makes up for the lack of kilometers, does it?
Yes.
Well, I came into the finish there, riding behind Ivan Basso, who was riding in with former professional, now commentator, Giada Borgato, who featured in a Kilometre Zero during the Giro d'Italia. She's, I think, the first female co-commentator on Italian television on Rai. So she's working this week as well, but let's catch up with her and see what she thought of the ride. So here we are, we just finished in Cittadella. Yeah. Did you enjoy the ride today?
Of course, it's been a great day with the champions, with Ivan Basso, with Fabio Cancellara, Daniele Bennati and Alessandro Ballan. And I'm here, I start this morning at 8:30 and it's a sunny day, it's a super day. We had fun, it's perfect day for a bike ride.
And you're working here commentating on the races as well, I guess.
Yes, yeah. I commentated the Giro del Veneto, the Serenissima Gravel, and tomorrow the Veneto Classic, so yeah. And I couldn't do this nice ride today in the Gran Fondo.
The Rosina was hard, I thought.
Yeah, also the Tisa is short, but it's really steep and really hard, but today it was fun. Tomorrow for the guys, it's not going to be fun, I think.
No. And is that finally the end of your season tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow is the last one. Then everybody goes on holiday. The cyclists, me too. And maybe we will see next season.
And we'll hopefully see you back here in Veneto next year.
Yeah, of course. And I live here in Veneto, so these are my roads. When I was cyclist, I used to training here also in this area, even if I'm from Padova. But yeah, I will always ride in this area, in this beautiful country, and I hope you too.
I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah, I'll be back next year as well.
Of course, and I will be here too.
I mentioned Asolo, where we went yesterday, climbed the hill, and missed out on the historic centre, which is absolutely beautiful when I went to visit it this morning. Very nice ride this morning, the nicest ride of the week for me, in the kind of the foothills of Monte Grappa, off to my left. I mean, Monte Grappa and the Alps kind of begin, and
you're into serious mountains. It's feast or famine as far as climbing goes, because you've got these huge mountains that sort of tower over Bassano del Grappa and Asolo, and then just plains, pan flat plains all the way to Venice. So you're either riding on pan flat roads or in very serious mountains, but the ride to Asolo kind of skirted the foothills of Monte Grappa for me, and there was a cycling link I found, because I spotted from some of the names of the roads there that the English poet Robert Browning once lived in Asolo, and he lived in a building that is now the Hotel Villa Cipriani. And there's a cycling link here, because in 2012 that building was bought by Massimo Zanetti, who is the head of Segafredo, the coffee company, who of course sponsored Trek Segafredo. It's now a hotel, so if you go and stay in the Hotel Villa Cipriani, which is a beautiful building, there's a link with the English poet Robert Browning and the head of Segafredo Coffee Company. So there you go. But we're watching the Veneto Classic in its closing stages here as they race towards Bassano del Grappa. They're going to finish on the newer bridge, not the Ponte Vecchio. And it's been an exciting race. I mean, Pino Bozzato has huge plans for this race. He wants it to become a proper classic, hence the distance is over 200 kilometers despite being so late in the year, and some pretty serious climbs. So let's see if it can live up to the billing that Pozzato is determined to give it. Well, Lionel, that was me in Veneto. Earlier on in the episode, we heard from the two of us at Paris-Roubaix, or certainly closer to Roubaix than Paris, as we tackled some of the pavé. I'm sure we'll be back there, but I won't be hurrying, personally. But it was great fun to relive it earlier in the episode, I think. More fun to relive it in audio form than to actually ride it, I think, on reflection.
I'm surprised, Richard, you didn't thrive on the pavé. I mean, you know, with the power you're putting out at the moment.
Being a big unit, mean?
No, I wasn't going to say that. But I mean, you're tall, you're in the mould of the Paris-Roubaix type riders. Not quite as tall as Magnus Backstedt, a former winner of Paris-Roubaix, who was well over 6 foot, but you're not far off. I thought that would be your territory, but perhaps these days the new slimmed down Richard Moore much happier on the climbs of Veneto, clearly.
Let's not get carried away. I mean, we also heard my experience on gravel. I describe myself as a gravel skeptic. I'd say maybe less skeptical, but still uncertain about the advantages of a gravel bike over a mountain bike. I love riding my mountain bike on tracks and trails, and I really enjoyed the day on the gravel bikes, but I felt that on some of the more technical sections the gravel bike felt less secure and safe than my mountain bike, and so maybe my bike handling skills just aren't up to it. But great fun, and it's going to be really interesting to see where gravel racing goes. Because that was billed as the first professional gravel race. There was a bit of disquiet afterwards about the fact there wasn't a women's race and there were no women's races that week in Veneto. I think they would like to add them next year. But the gravel race was an interesting one, and that to see how that develops over the next few years is going to be fascinating, I think.
Indeed. Well, we'll go off on some more adventures on road and a bit of gravel, and possibly not the pavé, in future episodes of Explore.
Well, there's lots to look forward to in this mini-series, which kick-reboots the Explore series, and I'm sure we'll be back with more over the winter. So we look forward to Mark Bowman's audio diary next week, and for now, that's all from us. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thanks, Richard.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.